The hailing frequencies are open, Patreons, because I am Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already know that because you are beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon. And we have kidnapped another beautiful, sexy guest to come and join us. We have Patrick Schumacher back, talk more Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn, and how to be a kick-ass man in Hollywood with us.
That's right. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, you beautiful, sexy people.
Go on.
Okay, so people out there know, I mean, you're a writer, you're an executive producer, you're also working on more shows than just Harley Quinn. But I want to know, where do you come from, and what led you to wanting to be a writer?
All right, so I come from, I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri.
I only asked because I did some, I could not find the answer.
Oh, you two are from the same neck of the woods, St. Louis.
Yeah. I'm from Southeast Kansas, so.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. The fellow Midwesterner.
Yeah.
So grew up in St. Louis in the burbs, went to an all boys Catholic school, I actually kind of loved. I liked it. It was very low pressure not having girls in our class. I knew I wanted to go to film school from a very early age. Like when I was like 10 or so is when Wayne's World came out, 10 or 12. And that's like my favorite movie of all time amongst a couple other movies. But that and like Pee-wee's Big Adventure were like movies that like made me want to be like a filmmaker. Now, concurrently, my parents, being from St. Louis, both worked at Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, in marketing. And I was kind of privy to a lot of like commercials that were being made in like the 90s, in like the heyday of like Bud Light commercials, like, and Budweiser commercials, like with the frogs and like the What's Up Guys and like all that stuff. And it was kind of like cool. And like, I was like, what if like I go to film school to be a commercial director? I was like, I kind of like the short form thing. Like commercials and music videos seem like a really cool thing to get into. So that's like what I went to film school for. And I ended up going to the University of Texas at Austin. And in about 2002, I moved out to LA with a film school degree from UT. And I kind of immediately started to do PA work. Now, just to backtrack and tell the story in nonlinear fashion. The summer between my junior and senior year at UT, I moved out to LA for an internship at a company called A Band Apart, which is Quentin Tarantino's production company.
Yeah.
But I worked in commercials and music videos. That division doesn't exist anymore at that company. But that is where I met Justin Halpern.
Oh, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah. So we actually met while we were in college. He was at San Diego State. I was at UT. But we interned together the summer of 2001. We were both living in Westwood over by UCLA.
Ooh, Westwood, they fancy living in Westwood.
Yeah.
Interns.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, I blew out my entire savings on a one-bedroom apartment that had the, like...
Oh, you must have.
Oh my God. Yes. I rented a car from Rent-A-Wreck for the summer.
What?
Yes. Like, I blew all of my savings. And it had, like, the Murphy bed that came out of the wall. Like, it was this tiny space, but it was, of course, you know, at the time, like, astronomically priced. And then Justin was living in like probably what should have been a condemned frat house. He had no ties to the fraternity other than they were like trying to sublease a room in the frat house. And so he got it. It was like $100 a month or something like that. That like literally had like a hole in the wall that led to like where the urinals were in the men's room. It was like the Fight Club house.
That sounds like something you would put in an episode of Harley Quinn as a joke.
Oh yeah. No, it was totally real. Like his mom like dropped him off one time and like cried when she saw the living condition. Oh. And like, it was bad. And so he was like, hey, can we hang out at your place a lot? Like a lot. Yeah, but we became kind of fast friends toward the end of the summer. The Westwood had a bunch of movie theaters. So we were like constantly like going to movies. The first one that we saw together was Pootie Tang. and we kind of just bonded over our mutual affinity for that movie. And then we stayed friends. And like, so we both kind of moved out to LA, but right before he did in the summer of 2003, he did his senior thesis film at San Diego State, and his professor let me co-write and direct it with him, which was like unheard of. But he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And we did a musical, like a full on musical that we shot on super 35 millimeter film back when people were still shooting stuff on film. It was like the cliche thing of like, I got my first credit card so that we could finish the movie and like do the, you know, develop the film, get it transferred so that we could color time it and all that stuff. Like post-production basically was funded by American Express and, you know, which I, you know, then paid off like 5 years later.
At a 29% interest rate.
Oh my gosh. Yes. 100%. I learned how credit cards worked because of that movie.
The hard and way.
The hard
yeah,
way.
Yeah, really?
Yes. And so, yeah, so we kind of stayed friends and started, you know, I eventually became a director's assistant in kind of the early 2000s and did that for a few years. Again, commercials, music videos. He moved to LA, was waiting tables. And then basically in the evenings, we were like writing features together. And that was kind of how I delved into like the writing of it all. I always enjoyed writing. I always, you know, did creative writing classes whenever I could, did it in college as well, screenwriting classes, but I never like set out to be like a full-time kind of writer. I was always like, I'm still going to be like directing stuff. But he and I really liked each other, really liked our sensibilities. And we're like, let's start writing features together. So we started out doing that to little to no success. We like got a thing like optioned by like Fox Atomic or somebody over at like 20th or something in like the mid 2000s, but that was kind of like it. And you know, we kind of entered the Disney Fellowship with like a Curb Your Enthusiasm spec and kind of did the typical kind of route of breaking in that way. And we got into like the semifinals, but never, you know, actually got into the program. And then it was like 2009, I want to say, when, you know, we had this body of work, but unproduced, unbought body of work. And that's when I took a job running Screen Junkies, which, you know, still exists. It's a different version.
Jason is an alum of Screen Junkies.
Yeah, I worked there. Yeah.
I was like, that's wild.
I had no idea.
Well, it wasn't what it became. There was no Honest Trailers. There was no
Hal Rudnick.
No Nick Mundy or anybody in that
camp. Nick's the reason we have our cat.
I've known Nick since I was like 23. Just through like roommates or something. I don't know how I know him, but love Nick. So I started running Screen Junkies, and Justin ran a site called Holy Taco that was all part of this Break Media, which became Defy Media. Back then it was like sort of offshoots of like break.com. And Screen Junkies, when I ran it, was like this, we didn't know what we were. It was like a kind of like a satire site, but also a news site. It was like, it was supposed to be a news site kind of told with a comedic voice. But we ended up doing a lot of like parody stuff. It was kind of a mess. I think if I had stuck around, I probably would have been without a job. But I didn't stick around because we ended up selling a show to Warner Brothers, because in 2009, Justin, I think, was working. He left Holy Taco. He went to Maxim.com. And had ended up, through one reason or another, moving back in with his parents in San Diego, and started writing down all of the stuff that his dad was saying to him.
This is shit my dad says,
it
correct?
Became shit my dad says.
Yes.
So at the time, he was literally just writing them in to his like AOL, like his AIM status, right? Like it was just for like the enjoyment of friends. And then a friend of ours who was running the fake Michael Bay account, who was my predecessor at Screen Junkies, was like, Justin, you should, and much more social media savvy than any of us, was like, you should make a Twitter account. And Justin was like, I don't think that social media is going to be a thing.
Justin and so, I have similar thoughts.
Yeah, like he didn't have a Facebook, he didn't have Twitter. Like, yeah, like Instagram, I don't think was even I don't even think Instagram was around in 2009, but he ended up trying his hand at the Twitter thing, and it like blew up virtually overnight. And, you know, it had like a, you know, like Rob Corddry and like some, you know, celebrities started like picking it up, retweeting him. It blew up. He ended up getting a book deal out of it to write a memoir called Shit My Dad Says, which it is what it became. And it was published by HarperCollins. And, you know, all these book publishers have, you know, they're part of a conglomerate that is affiliated with movie studios and TV studios. And so it was this crazy turn of events where he was contacted to adapt an as yet published book. Only like the galleys were going around, or like a couple of stories were going around that he had already written. But like they were making their, when I say going around, I mean making the rounds in quote unquote Hollywood, you know, and people started kind of salivating at the studios at the prospect of turning it into a TV show. And obviously the Twitter account at that point had exploded. And so it was this weird thing, like this kind of tables have turned sort of thing where studios were courting him and by extension me, because he was like, hey, they want to adapt this as a TV show. You're my screenwriting partner. Let's do that. And I was like, hell yes. And we ended up, you know, taking a bunch of meetings with studios and with, we got our representation at the same time because everybody was salivating at this property, right? Not even us as writers. It was just like, hey, this thing is going to sell somewhere. Let's represent these guys. And we ended up signing with ICM, who were like clearly like the only guys who like read our samples and were like, even if the Shit My Dad Says thing doesn't work out, we think we can like get you guys in meetings and hired on other staffs. And we were like, well, great. You guys clearly care the most about our careers. Whether or not that was true at the time, I don't know. But we're still with ICM and we love our agent. So things worked out. But like, but yeah, like we ended up going into Warner Brothers. They were like, we love this. We want to do this. We want to introduce you to some showrunners. So they introduced us to Max Muchnick and David Cohan, who were very well known as the creators of Will and Grace. And we walked into the meeting with them thinking like, I think this should be like an HBO show, single cam, like all the language that exists in the book. And we like walked out of that meeting with those guys being like, you know what? Like this should be a multicam on CBS. and you know, to their credit, like it became exactly that. Like they knew exactly how to like breathe life into this thing in a way that would get made.
And that leads me into a question for you, because this is where we are, because some people may not know this, but William Shatner became your dad.
Became Justin's dad.
Became Justin's dad.
Your show's dad.
Your show's dad. My apologies.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's how I became aware of this. And I have to ask, because everybody on this podcast knows that I am a huge Star Trek fan. Did you meet William Shatner? And do you have an interesting William Shatner story from making Shit My Dad Says?
Oh gosh, yes. I mean, we more than met with Bill.
How did you guys be like, you know, Captain Kirk needs to be
another nice Canadian.
yeah. He was always high on the list, and we ended up getting a cast contingent pickup by CBS, which meant that if we cast the dad and got a person who was kind of like on their list of acceptable actors in this role, they would pick us up to pilot. And so Bill ended up being very high on that list, and Max and Dave courted him. You know, they at that point, like, we kind of took a step back and we're like, you guys are the pros. Like, you can, you know, deal with, you know, essentially closing the deal, and you guys speak the language of, you know, courting an A-list actor to do this. So they really did the legwork on getting Bill interested and his reps interested in it. And then, yeah, like once he was signed on, you know, we were there every day interacting with him every day. And it was a wonderful experience with him. I think he's obviously like, he's this like TV legend.
Yeah. He's luminary. Like he now is so famous that he's almost more famous for playing sort of a...
He's a meme.
Yeah, he is a living, walking meme. That's how famous he is.
And it was so wild because, like, what I always marveled at was his work ethic, because at the time of doing Shit My Dad Says, he was doing 4 TV projects at the same time. Like, nothing, like ours was unique in that it was like the scripted half hour, you know, multicam thing. But he was also doing, I think Shatner's Raw Nerve, his like talk show. He had like 2 talk shows in the works, or it was a talk show. And then he had like a, almost like a recreation sort of like police show, like almost like an Unsolved Mysteries kind of thing that he was doing. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And then he was also like touring, like doing like corporate things. And like, it was like, oh, this guy's like a shark in the sense of like, if he stops moving, he's going to cease to exist. Right. And so he just had the craziest work ethic and always like, and he at the time he was 79, which is, you know, we're talking 2009, 2010. And he like prided himself on like always being off book, you know, meaning that, you know, he didn't have to like refer to his script while we were doing run throughs and things like that. And like 95% of the time he was, which is just incredible given, especially given, you know, his age. You know, the story wise, I mean, I probably have like a million of them, but like he was always like the first guy to work and the last one to leave. Like he was just a consummate professional in that way. And I remember he had this like gold, like Aston Martin or something. Like it was very much like a, oh, you know, that's his car where you would see it parked in the, you know, in his spot at the stage. Every time I would go up to the stage to do rehearsals or whatever in the morning or run throughs, read throughs, whatever, it would always be there before anyone else. And oftentimes he would just sit there because he would get there so early. He would like pull the seat back, get his newspaper out, and like had his like blue blocker sunglasses on or whatever, and just like read the paper, like classic like old guy move.
Wow.
But like there was one time where he like was taking a nap, and I talked to some other cast members who subsequently ended up having the exact same story, where I'm like walking past the car and I see William Shatner like laying prostrate in this car with like the engine running, and I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, he's no.
Dead. And of course he wasn't. But yeah.
We killed Captain Kirk. Yeah, my dad says like killed Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I'm like, do I get a mirror and like hold it under his nostril? Protocol for this. Yeah. But it was a super pleasant experience. And obviously, like, you know, show nights were insane because, you know, so many, he has so many fans, so many diehard vocal fans. And I remember shooting the pilot, and Jimmy Burrows directed the pilot. He's just a TV legend. You know, look him up if you don't know who he is, James Burrows. He has credits on like every major multicam sitcom, Cheers, Frasier, Friends, Big Bang Theory, you name it. He has had a huge hand in the inception of those shows. And, he directed the pilot for Shit My Dad Says. And I remember on show night, beforehand, he was just like, all right, Bill, you know, you're going to have the inclination to reach, you know, like for the audience, like play it big or whatever. And Bill was just like, oh, I won't reach, Jimmy. Don't worry about it. And then, of course, like on the first take when he like may have like flubbed a line or something, he turns to the audience. He's like, did I get that wrong? And the audience is like, no, we love you. He's of course just like reaching from the beginning, but he, you know, he knows and loves his fans. And oh yeah, I loved working with him. We had like a board of like words that he pronounced in a very funny way.
Sabotage.
Yes, exactly. Like sabotage. I think we tried to work that one into the show at one point.
Oh my God.
Someone once tried to tell me that that's because he's Canadian. And I was like, as a Canadian, no. That's just because he's a real treat.
Yeah. Or just like interesting, like French words, possibly because he's also Canadian, mm-hmm. like that he would bring into his everyday vernacular. Like he would always say, like, there's just a soupçon of pathos. In this scene, you know?
You say pathos, you didn't say pathos? Interesting.
Look, I mean, when you get to the legendary status of William Shatner, Captain Kirk, you just, Boston Legal, TJ Hooker, you just, he knows he can't be questioned. And to be honest with you, I don't blame him for flaunting that power recklessly.
Oh, he's one of the more stalwart gentlemen who I really hope moonlights in his, winter years as a cat burglar. It'd be a great turn for him.
Yeah. You're going to arrest him? No, you're not. So we could go on and on, Patrick, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time because we could talk about Powerless and Harley Quinn, but I want to end this podcast with what would be your advice to anyone out there that wants to write professional television or film? What would be the piece of advice for somebody that wants to be a writer in Hollywood?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably cliche at this point, but I really do think that this sort of undeniable kind of bulletproof advice that is always going to be true is just keep making stuff. Just never stop making stuff. You know, if you write something that you love and you have the good fortune of like getting it out there, doesn't matter. Keep like, what's next? Write that next thing and try and do something that you love, that you want to see on TV or in features or whatever, you know, strikes your fancy. Like, write the thing that you want to see that doesn't exist and try and make a splash that way and just never stop making stuff. Because the second you stop making stuff and rest on your laurels, things, you know, opportunities dry up and you just have to, especially when you're starting out, you just have to seize every opportunity possible, because once you do get your foot in the door, like, those opportunities do come. But you know, in order to get your foot in the door, the only thing that you can do that is unimpeachable is just to continue to make stuff and churn out material that is meaningful to you.
And I think that's excellent advice. It's sort of the work begets work.
Yeah.
Which you hear a lot. Patrick, thank you so much for letting us dig into your writer brain and all these Captain Kirk stories and Nick Mundy connections, and we loved it all. And please tell our listeners again where they can find you on social media.
Yep, I'm on Twitter at PM Schumacher. That's PMSCHUMACKER, and also on Instagram at that same address.
Patrons, if you have not watched Harley Quinn on HBO Max, make it matter, put it on, it's destination viewing. It's perfect. I finally got to watch it over the pandemic. I binged it all in one go, and I actually quite enjoyed watching it all in one go. So I highly recommend that to everybody. And if you haven't done that, please do that. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on this extra episode of Geek History Lesson.
Thank you, guys. Been a pleasure.
And everyone out there listening, thank you so much for your support on the Patreon. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Thanks for listening, super friends.
Bye.